I will see you single ladies. And I will tell you, every time I see this scene, I can't help but think, it's time to do the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to meet the ladies on this
morbid show tonight.
It's time to put on makeup. Buffalo Bill stars tonight. It's time to get things started.
Horse is mostly dead. It's just that its bits and pieces haven't figured it out yet, so they're like squidging against the glass.
Right.
It's very gross and very cool.
And then Carl runs out of the room and Catherine
follows him, but she does it by going, not going around the piece, but going between the pieces.
Right.
Which might be a metaphor, but I don't think they really suss that out.
Well, yeah, because there's a part of me that kind of wonders, I don't know how comfortable I would feel just like walking in between those. And I mentioned that while we were rewatching and you were like, what if it was still warm? And that just like,
because you have to know what it feels like to press against glass, right? But if it was heated by something's dying.
A human body is 98.6 degrees.
Cats have a higher temperature. I don't know what temperature a horse is supposed to be.
Right. But still, it's like it would be noticeably warm. Like, you know when it's 91 degrees outside.
I often do.
So,
okay. So, but now we enter the slideshow. What I call the sideshow.
Right.
Because we have these vignettes. And I think I counted six, but I didn't write them all down because it's a very complicated visual scene. And what happens is she walks into an area where there's these closed off panels. And she, because she's a dumb, walks up to this gear and pulls a lever. And then things start to happen in motion. So we've got these, I think, six scenes. There are these little vignettes that get exposed when she touches this lever and then hits this washer. And
We see something specifically unlatching on the other side. And one scene is of, I believe these are all his victims, because one scene is like a woman on it looks like a gynecologist table.
I think it's a dentist chair.
Oh, yeah, because she's got the stuff in her mouth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just her like legs are up in this like erotic way.
And that's the thing. That's the thing about this scene is that all of these women are hypersexualized. All of them are pigmented out. They've got the blue bleached eyes. They've got blonde hair, regardless of race. But they're all in this submissive sexual posturing. The first one is, and I'm not going to get them all right, but there's like the girl whose arms are tied up and she's like gyrating her hips. There's girl in the dentist chair who's tied to the chair with the apparatus holding her mouth open and she's gyrating her hips. Like the contortion is trying to escape, but the movie makes them sexual. Like if it was real life, these women would be fighting for their lives. But because it's in Carl's sick mind, there are these sexual playthings. We get another doll type girl with like a schoolgirl skirt and she's like cocked in front of mirrors, kind of doing this spinning and looking at herself.
I think that's supposed to be like his last victim because she's like the last one that we see. Also, interesting note with all of these women is their breasts are pretty much exposed, but there is no nipples. And that further, you know, kind of solidifies them into these like objects.
Well, dolls don't have nipples.
Exactly.
So they become this thing that's hypersexualized, but without the things that make them inherently human, I guess maybe is a point that you're aiming at.
Right, because he's turning these women into objects, not just through like objectification, but also because he's literally killing them and then turning them into, he's pretty much transformed them into objects in his mind.
Yes, we close up on J-Lo discovering the blue, I call her the blue lady in my mind, but she's probably the only POC person that she...
of his victims.
Yeah. And she's sitting with these... these almost skeletal, like, okay, imagine Zero from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right.
Okay, imagine that as several animals, like a deer and a dog and a cat and whatever. And she's sitting there. She looks caked in like ash almost with, again, the blue eyes. Her wrists are bound and she's reaching out. And J-Lo seems to reflect like some connection with her, and she wants to do something. And you see her kind of reach out like she's going to try to save her from this vignette that mm-hmm. she's in, this scene that she's being portrayed in, this thing that he was able to quantify into a little cube, right?
This cell
that you're so right. Oh man, yeah. No, you're right. It's this little cell, this ability to quantify it in this little spot.
Right.
I hate all of that, but you are absolutely right.
It's very on the nose.
Yeah.
I think the scene is very reminiscent of 13 Ghosts when they're all kind of locked up and then get released.
Gorgeous, mm-hmm. macabre, dark. Parts of it are sexy, weird. I love 13 Ghosts. We should probably do that sometime. Mm-hmm. Let us know in the comments below. No, just kidding. This is on YouTube. Okay, but like... we have glossed over the fact that the first person who gets released is, you see this hulking figure, and this they brush past this clipping of like a bodybuilder lady who I think has the most prominent breasts. Again, no nipples, but she steps out of her vignette and starts to follow J-Lo down the hallway. And just as J-Lo's reaching for this young diminutive figure to help, she gets her arm grabbed and she gets whipped against the wall. She gets flung over this girl's shoulder, and then she is walked all the way through water, through this vast chasm, into this weird little Minecraft house, because it's just perfectly square and it only has a throne room in it. And like, why?
Right.
And she's thrown unceremoniously to the floor. Bodybuilder lady leaves. And J-Lo is like laying facing the door with her back towards the throne. And it gets, and now it gets weird.
So this is where the science breaks down for you.
Like, we look up the staircase to this throne, and we see Vincent D'Onofrio. His hands are like, one is cupped up chest, one is cupped midair, as he gazes to the sky with his weird, maybe appropriative Asian ponytail thing. But hey, the designer was Asian, so like, let's go with it. And then from his back, where all of these hooks are, mm-hmm. we see these purple curtains. They encircle the entire room, which has to be 200 feet tall, 200 mm-hmm. feet wide. It's a perfect cube. And then he starts to walk down the stairs, and they detach from these holders. And then he comes down, and she's watching the curtains come down from the walls. And she turns around, and she's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, what are you doing here? Right? And she's like, huh? And she like cups her hands like she's about to do that. And he's like, what are you doing here? And then she's like, ah! And then she touches her hand and she's popped out.
Right. So every time she needs to get out of this area, there's a chip on her hand that she presses. Mm-hmm. And that's how they get her out. Meanwhile, my note is just sort of like, it's going to be hard to redraw that curtain.
Okay, I just turned my page because we got ahead of ourselves. I'm not ahead of ourselves. We are way behind in recording, I'm sure. This is who we are as recorders, but...
3 days.
I want...
We've been here 3 days.
Possibly 4. The lights are dark. Okay, but like, I would like that entire scene with the vignettes and the ladies. I would like that all. Okay, I want that visual lifted, and I want to hear it with all the single ladies playing in the background. So like, J-Lo walks in and she like hits the button, and in the same way that somebody in like a cliche video drops a coin in the nickel box of a jukebox, she touches the lever, or somebody drops the coin, and it's like, all the single ladies. And then it's like the ladies just like, I put my hands up because I'm tied here and I'm gyrating because he makes me
We're totally, as a podcast, acknowledging that it isn't J-Lo that sings this song.
I know it's Beyonce. Is I'm not
I don't want people thinking that we're just like
that ignorant and white.
No, my melanin is deficient, but like,
I will see you, single ladies, and I will tell you, every time I see this scene, I can't help but think, it's time to do the music, it's time to light the lights, it's time to meet the ladies on this
morbid show tonight.
It's time to put on makeup. Buffalo Bill stars tonight. It's time to get things started.
Oh, so I mean, you're not alone. It's just I'm on a different planet.
Okay.
So It's also something that's mentioned is that, you know, I think it's after she comes out. If her mind thinks that it's real, then she can die in there.
Okay, and so like, she snaps out and the guy's right. like, she went in too deep. And Vince was like, what? Too deep? And he's like, if she thinks it's real. And that's not what the white doctor right. guy says. But that's not how he sounds. But he's like, yeah. she went in too deep and she thought it was real. You know, that old wives' tale.
You die in a dream, you die in real life.
I've died plenty in dreams and you just keep dreaming or you wake up and then you have to be like, I got some emotional issues because it turns out your subconscious is not the real thing, it's your dreams. And sometimes you could just have like a final moment in a dream and be like, oh, yes, I'm not dead.
Mm-hmm.
But if you die in the Matrix, you do die in
that is
real true. Life.
That is justifiable. I mean, that is real math.
Because that's technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you introduce technology, ho, 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 anything's possible.
She has a chip in her hand.
Yeah.
She's got a circuit board across her face. She's wearing that tingle weird suit.
Yeah, but none of it's like inside like, of her cerebral.
The hand thing, though.
Oh, but that's a hand.
So hand doesn't count as part of your body?
Did you say tingle?
Like cerebral.
Tingle suit.
Tingle suit, as in tingle from Zelda?
No, I would not make an accurate Zelda reference.
Now I'm always thinking that it's Tingle in all those dreams. Tingle was the one who designed the software. He just wanted to get people into skin tight suits. There's a lady who is stuck in a tank and water keeps coming down and she's praying to God. And I don't think God's going to do anything for her in this moment.
I call this scene more water torture, but that's what I call every time they cut to this lady, because not a lot changes except for that it gets worse.
Yeah.
Oh, there's more water?
Yeah.
More water torture.
Right.
Oh, we cut back to the lady? It's more water torture.
Right.
Okay, is she mad about it? She cussing about it? Guess what they call this scene? More water torture.
Right.
I just make a note of it in my notes, but I'm not willing to engage it because nothing changes. She's just a more and more abused woman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like sands in an hourglass.
Water is filling up fast.
Hey, why don't we go real deep while we talk over a kid in a coma? Let's just get real close and be like, things are bad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how bad they are as we talk over his nearly lifeless body.
Right. They do eventually transition outside.
Yeah, because she's like, I don't want to talk about this with you in here. So then they go outside.
Right.
Oh, and she does mention that schizophrenia in children is often misdiagnosed as autism. And I'm like, 2000? Year 2000, are you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking to me?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking to me, year 2000?
This is a moment when I would like to just clarify that this movie is 20 years old.
Please.
It is a 20-year-old movie, and it has 20-year-old ideology, but still.
It's also got 20-year-old pacing. He's all like, time is of the essence. We're well within the 40-hour period. We need to, let me talk about my backstory for a while. He then proceeds to talk about why he became an FBI agent for like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, fascinated. Just looking at him, watching him exposit about himself. And she's just like, yeah, tell me more. I'm super soft J-Lo.
My curls have more personality than I do in this film. And that's partly because of the writing.
The only thing stiff about her is her curls. The rest of it is like melty caramel.
That's fair. Yeah, so basically the whole point of this scene is to show the ideologies between Catherine and Novak. Catherine believes that everybody has the ability to change and be a better person.
Or has that, what I like to call the golden core inside of them. There's a beautiful part of you that is not connected necessarily to all of the evil that you do. And those are two different things. And he goes, just because you suffer abuse does not mean that you will become an abuser, which is also a valid point, but those two things are not mutually exclusive. Those two things can exist at the same time.
Right. And I do like the fact that the movie does step outside of itself to say that, you know, in this moment, in the story where we show someone who has been horribly abused and then they turn into an abuser themselves, that does not mean that if you are abused, you are going to be an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this moment, it's so easy to kind of take that from these kind of movies because it's such a common trope in movies where you have serial killers and it's like, oh, they had such a horrible childhood or they had this horrible thing happen to them and then they went crazy. And that's not always the case. And it's kind of my frustration with the 2019 Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix is just one bad day and that can make you go crazy. And it's not really, I mean, what the movie actually says is that it's not just one bad day. It's several bad days over the course of a life. And eventually you get fed up. But when you have I believe that when most people who have mental illness, they do not go psychotic. People who have mental illnesses, when their lives end in tragedy, most of the time, it's not because they're hurting other people. It's because they're hurting themselves.
Yes, I find that more often than not, and I'm 100% agreeing with you, most often people who experience trauma of any of the rainbow that is trauma, they turn it inwards. Mm-hmm. I think even the people I've known who have had episodes of like psychosis, like serious, like they've lost all of their psychosis. I've seen people, act out, but more often than not, they're turning it inward. Mm-hmm. And that self-destruction is so incredibly tragic to witness that it's ridiculous that we live in a society that moves that outward. We're like, oh, he was really sad. And so like it's that thing. Well, let me go like full, what's it, Stephen from like SNL? It's that thing where like we only acknowledge mental illness if it causes other people harm.
Yeah.
When actually most trauma results in self-harm that can either be unlifing yourself or like resulting in addiction or reiterating trauma for the rest of your life that may eventually lead to passive abuse of other people. That's real mental illness. Not everyone picks up an AK. Not everyone decides to bleach all of their pretend girlfriends into Barbie dolls.
Right.
Just makes me crazy.
And I'm glad. And that's what I like about this moment. And even though it kind of like disrupts the pacing of them trying to like figure things out, like if Catherine came out and was like, look, it was a lot. And she says this in the scene where they're in Edward's room. She's like, I felt things that I never wanted to feel again. And if she had just said, you know, I just need an hour because that kind of threw me for a loop and I just need to recover for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because she kind of comes across as like, I don't want to do this anymore. But then she goes back in.
He's like, Vince's character explains that he's been through a lot of trauma. The reason he chose to be an FBI agent as opposed to an attorney is because a guy that he was prosecuting got off and he ended up killing his victim. And
he wanted to be the one to nab the bad guy.
Well, he did. It's not just that he wanted to be the one to nab the bad guy, but he saw the system failing because of screwed up evidence. And he figured that he was meticulous enough to be able to grab the guy. Okay. But, so really what breaks down happening is he wants to save the person before mm-hmm. they get murdered. And she is more about the person who's murdering. Like, how do you fix that? And so they're on opposite sides of the coin. He's like, I don't care about the guy. I care about the kid. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I am dealing with the guy and I have nothing to do with the kid. You know?
Right. I think there's also like Vince Vaughn's character. He specifically said that the guy who ended up getting off for evidence, mm-hmm. he ended up killing his victim. Mm-hmm. And then when that case went through for the killing of the victim, which there was all this evidence for, the lawyers ended up putting him into a psychiatric ward, claiming that he was screwed up because of such and such. And it's like,
he was sexually abused his whole life. And she's like, isn't that valid? And he's all like, abused doesn't mean abuser.
Right. And that's where he kind of stands on it.
And she leaves it there too. Like, they don't actually say what happens to the guy. Just mm-hmm. that they got him caught up in the paperwork and he kind of lived there, citing insanity based on the abuse that he'd suffered.
Right.
At the beginning of this conversation too, J-Lo, Catherine, is saying that it seems like there's a complete separation now between who...
Baby Carl, who I only write down as a lowercase c for some reason.
Yeah, she says that Carl's completely gone. Like, all that's left is this.
She says Carl exists, but there's the dominant king character who is the one running the show mm-hmm. in his sick, twisted kingdom, she says.
No, but the way that she says it initially before they have the conversation is all that remains is this dominant, godlike thing that Carl has invented for himself or has probably existed and has been like driving him to do these murders. And then they have the conversation about where they stand on these different issues. And then she says, what I said about Carl being completely separated now isn't completely true because I saw little Carl, basically. And that is the reason that she's willing to go back in is because she feels like there's still that one little bit that she could
communicate with. He might tell her about Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so random FBI guy who had fallen asleep on the desk when before she'd come out of her last session with Carl, he comes out and he's like, "Why didn't you wake me?" And Vince Vaughn, in like the second joke, was like, "You're so cute when you sleep. I didn't want to."
Yeah.
There's no humor that lands well in this entire script, and that's fine. I don't need it to be funny all the time. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm here for, applauders.
Yeah, and so she goes back in.
Yeah, she's like, "Tell him." He's like, "What should I tell him?" And she's like, "Prep him. I'm going to go back in." Because it's all very much, okay.
Yeah. And so she goes back in and it's almost like, is she actually in his mind?
They bring in his dog.
Oh, yeah. Because she was like, does he have any animals, like a cat or a dog? And that speaks to the wolf that she saw.
Yes. And so they bring in Valentine. He's licking. Oh, gross. Oh, my God. You guys know if you've heard more than one episode. I don't want licking. Licking is gross. I don't need that cinematically. I don't need it. Don't lick thing. They obviously put something on. Oh, Werner Ferns. Vincent for Werner Ferns. Onofrio's. Vince Onofrio. Oh, Duff Onofrio. Vince D'Onofrio's fingers. They put something on his fingers and the dog is just like licking and like licking and licking. And the dog, even like on the camera, is like, "I don't really want to do this. I know you put this chicken juice on here so that I would like lick his fingers, but I really hate it. But I know it's what I'm supposed to do right now because I'm a good boy. I'm the bestest boy." And she's like, "You're a good boy, Valentine." I'm like, "He is a good boy." Lydia, whom I love. Did you read the credits?
No.
Do you know what Valentine's name is?
No.
You want to know?
Sure.
Some people call him
Tim. His name is Tim.
And he's an albino Siberian husky.
They call him an albino German shepherd, and that is super wrong.
Right.
He's a husky. Mm-hmm. Purebred. Good boy. He's the best boy. He's a good boy.
So she goes back in. And it looks like she may have to come back out. And
hey, there's a power problem. I need you to check. God, why does my brain remember these things? I need you to check circuit breakers 6 through 12. Right. And she's like, "Oh, what are you talking about?" Because she's always groggy when she comes out. And so she climbs off the table. She unhooks herself. She walks past the dog. Mm-hmm. She's like walking down. She's walking to the other side of the room. The room is only about 12 feet. Ish, maybe as many as 20 feet wide. And they're on the other side, like a DJ booth. They're on the other side, like controlling all the bits and pieces. But there's like three sealed doors between them. And if the power goes out, she's got to go over and she's walking. And then at one point, like you see the perspective shifts and she starts getting shorter and everything keeps getting taller, but she's groggy. So she doesn't notice. And then like she puts her hand on a cart that's in her way and she's like, "Ugh," except the cart is as tall as her like forehead. And then she gets all the way to the wall underneath the circuit breaker and she looks up and she's like, "I can't possibly reach this." And she turns around and she is 2.5 feet tall.
She turned chibi.
She's a chibi J-Lo. And then she turns and she looks and her body is still suspended on the other side of the room. And she's like, "Oh, shit."
Right. And then she kind of like shrinks down. So she's like grabbing her knees. And that's when it changes and she's stuck in a...
Hey, dream shift. She's in a... The cell.
And at this point, Naomi was it Jen or Naomi? I can't remember. But one of you, I think it was Naomi, because Naomi was like, why do they call it the cell? Why is it called the cell? And then I pointed out that this was one of the notes that I made 2 weeks ago. And I forgot that I made it. And I was like, it's my Vic in a box. And Naomi was like, "You have to keep that in." And then I did. But only after I pretty much said there's a reason why it's called the cell. It's because all of his victims are in cells.
It's my Vic in a box.
Before she actually gets into that cell, she says inside of the room, "I'm already inside." And she verbally actually says that. It like the doctor cuts like, out.
The doctor says, what did she say? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, poof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's our only point where we actually catch where she's like still under, but she kind of has popped out a little.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you're not totally asleep, but you're already dreaming.
But it's another example of how the transitions in this film are amazing and very much like what it's like to actually dream. I mean, I imagine there's like one or two listeners who don't experience normal dreamlike states.
Trazodone for me.
Trazodone does it for you?
Yeah, when I'm on trazodone, I will experience sleep paralysis and experience dreams happening around me while I'm visually experiencing things.
Yeah, I've had extreme stress situations that have led to verbal or physical somnolism. I walk and talk in my sleep sometimes. Not so much walk, but talk still a little bit. But like the extreme dreams that happen when you do that are they're a trip.
Mm-hmm. I used to work for a movie theater and I brought home a poster of Queen Elizabeth.
I remember this. I thought it was fascinating about you.
And I had that poster on my wall next to my bed. On that poster, there's a whole bunch of like, just like slanderous adjectives for Queen Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. So she's like sitting like this, right? And it's just like harlot, liar.
Yeah.
Like all of these words.
Right. And then one night I went to bed and she started like talking to me. That was pretty weird.
But also I remember you having a...
She was reaching out of that poster.
I remember also, because I was super fast, I'd be like, tell me all about it. There was one time when you had a hag nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So the paralysis demon, they call him sometimes. This lady sat on the end of Jen's bed and like leaned in and looked at her and then just slowly took a bite out of a sandwich.
And she offered me some. And she was doing that weird, they do it a little bit in this movie too, especially with the ladies in the cells, where it kind of like flips, it does that switchy little twitch like, thing.
Like
and
fit, yeah.
And yeah, but I was on the top bunk of a bunk bed that didn't have the lower bunk. So when somebody walked in to my room while I was sleeping, I would be like face to face with them while they're standing up. And so she like didn't have to like sit down or anything to offer me the sandwich. It was very... polite of her, I guess.
Crazy towns.
Crazy.
You're not meant to be on trazodone, and that's okay.
Yeah.
There are lots of alternatives, and you should seek the medical advice of professionals who have your best interests at heart.
Huzzah!
You.
And so Catherine is in this box, and she tries to, like, get out through the top, but as soon as she does, it's like gravity, like, goes in reverse.
Yeah, and she's hung by her feet. She's suspended.
Right.
And then she does the most amazing, and I will never be able to escape being hung by my feet, curl, and she unhooks herself, and she has just a fall. And she falls through this great cataclysmicism.
Right.
And she falls through a hole in the floor, and then she smacks into what looks like water, but there's no transition. It's just air into this water-like thing. And then she starts calling out for Valentine.
Yeah, she's weightless.
Yeah, well, weightless, but she's sinking. So like,
right.
So like, it is like a water-like environment. She's like, Valentine, come here. And then, okay. So here's where my tangent for this scene comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Valentine represents, in my opinion, that love that has no conditions.
Unconditional love.
That one. Okay, so dogs give unconditional love to a person, regardless of the things they've done, as long as they're kind to them. Like, the dog loves you. But, like, we all have different pets, right? A dog, unconditional love, you got a treat, I'm super down, you're the most amazing person ever. A cat? What kind of love do you get from a cat? A cat is, like, okay, a dog is unconditional love for you. A cat is your unconditional love for a little asshole who's going to fuck with you every once in a while, is my opinion, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Lydia, you own a turtle. What kind of unconditional love is that? They will never do anything for you.
Right. And you can't really, like, pet a turtle because, like, I cleaned out his tank this morning.
Uh-huh.
And he was just chilling. I mean, he didn't, like, one, I picked him up out of the tank and he was like, and so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to dry you off. I'm going to let you go downstairs and you're going to do your whole turtle thing downstairs. And then I have to go ahead and come over here. So when I go to pick him up, he's again like chilling in his environment outside of the water and everything. And he's like, because he doesn't like being touched. And so, but I mean, he's generally pretty like, he gets pretty excited when I come home and I'm like sitting next to the tank, and like at first it's sort of like, oh, okay, you're here, that's cool. And then he sees, what, you're here a second day in a row? And then he gets really excited because he sees me next to it. And like, I don't know, like I think he gets hungry.
Uh-huh.
And I think he does, like, I wouldn't call it unconditional love. It's more like, hey, I'm bored and you're here, sweet.
Okay, so to reiterate, dogs are unconditional love for you.
Mm-hmm.
Cats are your unconditional love for their ass. And turtles are more like ecstatic experience for the coexistence of the both of you.
Yeah.
You exist. I exist. This is amazing.
Yeah. But it can be fleeting. I think it can get pretty fleeting at times. So it's like very in the moment. I feel like my turtle's very much in the moment.
That's great, though. That's not bad. Being in the moment's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like being in a dream.
Yeah.
Shall we continue?
Yes.
Okay. I will also say, and I will reiterate this, Valentine is the best actor in this entire film.
Right. And so Catherine gets Valentine to take her to where Carl is. And that's where we see Carl next to a tub that has a corpse and bloody water. And I noted in here, childhood abuse. Oh, that's right. That's right. Sorry.
I think we're skipping a bit because my notes say locket locator.
Right. That's when she goes to the house that Carl grew up in, mm-hmm. and he's cleaning the dishes very frantically. She gives him the locket and says, If you ever
feel like I'm around but you can't see me, mm-hmm. flash this mirror like this and I'll be able to find you, which is beautiful. It's a little poetic.
And it's kind of what Edward did earlier. She did it with Edward,
and this is a tool that she pulls out,
mm-hmm.
and it seems fairly effective,
right?
But while she's helping him clean dishes, a plate falls to the ground,
right? And he like shoves her into the closet, mm-hmm. as his dad comes in, mm-hmm. and starts. You know,
this is the second time he saved her life inside his own head.
Mm-hmm. And so we see three specific moments of childhood abuse,
but we also have. Animal moment number 10.
Yeah.
Do you know what's happening?
No.
Eel feet.
Oh, yeah. She's like...
Eel feet. So... Eel feet. Eel. Jen sang a song about it.
Eels.
Eels.
Eels. Eels up inside ya. Finding an entrance where they can.
Eels.
Eels up inside ya. Finding an entrance where they can.
Eels.
I don't know the rest
eels.
Of it.
Eels. Oh, it's...
Right.
It's Mighty Boosh.
It's from Mighty Boosh. There's a song about eels. Right. It's gross. Did you dance with a boy? Sure you did. We all did. But this is post 2000. But she looks down. She's standing in a basement. It's full of eels. That's it. And then what you were saying about the three different
moments of childhood abuse that we specifically see.
Yeah, they're tragic.
Yeah, because like he broke a dish and then he shoves her into the closet and she's peering through. And we see one, Carl gets slapped. His dad is like, you broke that dish on purpose.
Let's break all the dishes. Then he breaks another dish.
Right. And then we see Carl with his dad and a woman. And his
She's not your mother. Your mother left us.
Right.
And look at this. And then he spreads her legs and is like, look, look, look.
Mm-hmm.
And so the third instance is his dad catches him playing with dolls. And it's like, I didn't raise a... Please bleep that, Jen. And then he beats him next to the bed tape, the bed
takes,
side.
Yeah, takes off his belt, beats him with his belt, and then he takes an iron.
Mm-hmm, and burns him on the chest. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to note that we have both physical, emotional, and sexual abuse,
mm-hmm.
at their worst in all three directions.
Right.
For this poor kid who's been sick for the whole of his life.
Right. And
then we go to the bathtub
and she comes out of the closet. And that's when we see Carl next to, mm-hmm. the bathtub.
Grown Carl.
Grown
We've been
Carl.
Dealing with 6-year-old Kyle ish.
Right.
Up until now.
So this is Vincent D'Onofrio.
Mm-hmm.
This is I don't have a funny name. I was because you had a hard time saying D'Onofrio. I was like Alfredo. D'Alfredo. Vincent, yeah. D'Alfredo. Comes in and he does this, and I feel like his acting in this scene is very well done.
This is his best scene,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt.
Right, and he talks about...
he says it first off, he goes, this is my first victim.
Right, and he says that it was really messy and...
He had no idea what he was doing.
She mentions, like, was there something that happened to you with water?
Yeah, there's water dripping outside the window. She's in a bathtub full of water. It just seems like a really damp room overall. He's got rubber gloves and he's smoking while he's ripping her guts out and throwing it into this bowl on the side. And she does say, was there something that happened with water? Did you like go swimming? Or was that the phrase? Did something happen? And he turns and he like wide eyes at her and he's like, it was my baptism.
Yeah. And
he knew exactly his instigating moment.
Right. And so we see the scene kind of cut with moments of the baptism.
Yeah, bits we've seen already.
Right. And so basically he says that when he had the baptism, mm-hmm. that's when the voice really came. And that voice was very clear, was very like strong, mm-hmm. and was very, this was like his rock for the longest time.
Well, he says, my dad pushed me under the water. I had a seizure or something. I think I was drowning,
mm-hmm.
and nobody would help me, but this voice was there.
Right.
And then he said, my dad took me home that night. He broke three of my ribs and fractured my jaw. And I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we see a cute little puppy version of Valentine.
Okay, so it turns out that this puppy Valentine, this baby Tim, baby Tim, because we find out eventually that Tim was adopted 3 years ago. So he's been killing for 3 years that we know of. He says it's my first, and we have no reason to believe he's lying.
Right.
3 years. So he got the dog, and then he got the ladies. That sounds wrong.
Right. And so
he stands up and starts yelling at her because he's like, don't lie to me. And she's like, I'm here to help you. He's like, liar.
Yeah. And that's when we see the hot iron scar on his chest.
Yeah. It's this triangular iron shaped scar right in the middle of his chest. It's heartbreaking. He's covered in scars.
Right. And he knows that she is there specifically for another reason. He calls her out on it. And
she's like, tell me where Julia is. Yeah. Tell me about Julia.
And he's just like, not going to tell you. Not going to tell you. And he slinks into the background.
He starts talking backwards.
Oh, yeah.
Sean fact.
He's not talking backward. He's walking backwards at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but walking backwards into a shadow. But there is like a voice change.
Stargirl walks backwards and speaks in a warped voice similar to the episode The Man from Another Place in Twin Peaks.
Woo! And that's when... Yeah. And as
he... That's my impression of people talking backwards. That's what he sounds like. Shut up. That's what he sounds like.
That's good.
Thanks.
And so Carl goes into the shadows and it's
just tell me where Julia is. Hey. And he goes completely black in the corner of the room.
Right. And then right behind Catherine,
her left side. No, this is what happened. She watches him back into the corner and she's like, Julia, I need some help with Julia. And her hands are poised to press the chip on her hand.
Right.
And him in like these leather culottes. Skirty things and his weird horn things and his weird caked ashy head and shoulders. I legit thought he was an African-American man the first time I watched this film. It took like a couple times before I was like, oh, that's just him heavily makeuped. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've ever seen a black actor like coated in ash colored stuff, like he looks like them because his hair is very short and very like caked and it kind of looks almost like the tight
cornrows.
Ringlets. Like the tight ringlets of a very coarse hair, like buzzed really short. And so I was like, I don't recognize this guy. It's totally Vince again. His arms up under her arms, spreading them so she can't push her thing. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, ugh! We cut to the guys running the experiment room and they're like, something's wrong. That what Vince is on a couch. She's like, what? They're like, that thing that we told you would never happen would happen. It's happening. And he's like, what? And then we cut back and Vince is shoving J-Lo on the ground and he's all like, he does this thing where he hands to chest, hands up into the air, and he looks like he's calling something out of nothing. And then all of a sudden he has a collar and he clamps it and there's blood and there's like a leading ring on the and I still want a collar. Mm-hmm. What kind of jerk am I? I just like fancy jewelry custom-made jewelry for me. I don't care if it signifies something. I just like it. Right. Okay. I'm sorry. Just to cut through all of that bullshit, like they're like, oh no.
Yeah. This is the moment where the voice in Carl's head pretty much takes over and he traps Catherine in Carl's mind.
She absolutely does not know that this is in his head now. She believes everything is true at this very moment.
Right. And that's when they're like, outside of the body, outside of the dream, they're like, oh, you gotta go ahead. We someone's gotta go in there. And
Dr. Miriam's like, I'll do it. And white generic doctor is like, you can't do it. I need you here. And then Vince is like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah. I'll do it.
And they got that third slot because of stuff that they used to try.
And it fits him perfectly. Like, there's no, like, stretch or give. It's just a Vincent shaped suit.
Right. And so they're getting him.
It's funny that you should say that, Vincent shaped suit, because Vincent D'Onofrio plays Edgar in Men in Black.
Oh, Vincent suit.
Edgar suit. They refer to it as an Edgar suit.
Need some sugar water. I love sugar water. That's what he kept asking for. Except I want sugar water. So, like, it's really interesting that they get Vince Vaughn in this suit, and he's talking to Dr. Miriam, and she's like, "This is a terrible idea. You shouldn't." He's like, "I've got to." She's like, she literally says, "Okay." Mm-hmm. Like, literally has an okay moment.
Yeah.
And then
the transition for Vince Vaughn going into the dream world, mm-hmm. for Novak to go in there, uh-huh. is you see like blood dripping in an IV.
Uh-huh.
And then it like goes all like 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yes. We have another water torture scene, I believe. And then,
oh, yeah. Yeah. Because this was the note where I was like, sometimes God says you do the work.
Yes. My favorite, I do listen to My Favorite Murder, and the people that I love to cheer on are the ones like, and so she was a victim, but then she decided to do this. She picked up her chopped off arms and walked into town, or she like, she like decided to memorize his license plate and his driver's license number and was like, okay, officer, here, you can have this when I escaped naked into the night. Like, there's nearly always something you can do. And I think that's important.
Right.
Yes, sometimes you are the victim, but there's always something you can do. And I think that more people should be empowered to mm-hmm. do that.
Right.
And that's just a tiny soapbox. That's a soap bubble.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And so Novak is in the, gets in the suit. Doctor says, okay, and then transitions into the dream.
Yes, the credits dub this part Novak's trip.
Nice.
And it looks like a 90s high grade, a late 90s, let's be mm-hmm. fair, fancy screensaver.
Reminiscent of like the Lawnmower Man, I think.
I don't know enough about the Lawnmower Man to say yes or no about that, Jen.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the Lawnmower Man.
You're not missing a whole bunch.
And...
oh, he falls into the ground.
Falls into the ground.
And then we enter probably another Sean fact. He falls into a painting.
Oh, that's right. It's the ladies who are in the sand.
Mm-hmm. They are sitting on these dug rows. They have like bonnets on, like maybe a novice would. Their torsos are wrapped in black as they like clutch their own bosoms. Like a straitjacket almost, but they don't have bottoms on. Mm-hmm. And their faces are turned towards the sky as if they are like...
Their mouths agape.
Yes, exactly. Almost as if they're tortured.
The painting is called Dawn by Norwegian painter Odd Nerdrum.
Yeah, Nerdrum. Nerdrum. Nerdrum.
First name, Odd.
I love it.
A-U-D?
O-D-D.
Oh, wow.
He's real odd. He's an Odd Nerdrum, which is what I'm going to check in into every hotel named as at some point.
Yeah, and they're not even, like, you know, in those made rows in the original. It's just guys with their legs out, kind of like how you two were stretching out your legs earlier to see if you could touch your toes.
Might be why I joined in. I cannot, but Jen can.
But the agaping mouths is definitely...
And this kind of dystopian, unfulfilled landscape, it feels tragic and vast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how he feels about the absent mother in his life.
Right.
And she, these three women definitely represent that missing, that lack in his life. I don't know what they say.
The very first one I catch, and she says, "Have you seen my boy, my poor boy?" And it's like supposed to definitely be his mom.
Yeah.
And,
oh, the second one or something, he's just like, "His father took him from me."
Right. But it's almost like there's the mother as a sympathetic, like she cares about me figure.
Uh-huh.
The mother as a, you know, blamer, because his dad probably fed him the narrative that your mother blamed me for everything uh-huh. and she left me with everything. And then the third feels like his mother as like an actual abuser, just as bad as his dad.
Oh,
that's the way that I kind of like it almost sounds like that's kind of the progress. Like, she cares about him. She is not taking responsibility for the fact that she left,
because
uh-huh. We don't know if his mom died or if she full on left. The way that his dad talks is she left.
Yeah.
And then the last is probably like the way that his father kind of like the frustration that a child must feel at a parent just picking up and leaving.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that is a tragedy that I've never experienced. So it's very, mm-hmm. it's very stark, mm-hmm. especially with this. I mean, if you take just that scene, like, if imagine this is a short film and it only is Vince Vaughn waking up in a puddle mm-hmm. and then it cuts off as he like leaves these three tragic women. Like, if you had that to pontificate on alone, you could spend an hour.
Mm-hmm. It would be very easy too. And that's why I think that you're right in saying that this would have done better as an art house film
mm-hmm.
rather than something as, you know,
people love this. Vince Vaughn's the new, that one lady is in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. The new Jodie Foster.
Yeah. Vince Vaughn is the new Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Okay, so the dawn.
And then he, like, goes, and then he starts, does he just walk off?
Okay, so he starts to walk off. He gets flashed in the face by a light.
Oh, that's right. That's what draws him away from the scene.
Yes, it's because he's in a new environment. He's mm-hmm. been like mind into this place, and he's kind of observer. And you could see how he might get lost in observing. But then he got the flash to the face away. And although we don't know if he's had this explained to him that he needs to follow that light because he's being called to, mm-hmm. He does walk into. He finds himself wandering into a room, and he's staring at a wall where the light is flashing. And then he realizes that it's a reflection. So then he turns around. He sees baby Carl. Mm-hmm. I say baby Carl, but I mean like 6-year-old Carl.
Right.
Who then like runs away. But Vince is led into a room where J-Lo is sitting mm-hmm. in what my notes call the sexiest Lopez ever.
Definitely. Like she's got this red and black striped dress. She's just sitting down. And it's kind of like draped over this circular cushion thing.
Yeah. She's chained by the neck mm-hmm. to the floor. The decor feels like modern Moroccan with like these flat shell chimes above the bed, these columns. She has black on top, red on the bottom, voluminous wig. She has a red collar leading into a black spirally patterned dress. She has a very dark lip mm-hmm. with nice shine on it. Her eyeliner is thick and cat-like. She has a golden mask over her face that makes her, she feels like half robot, half mantis. Just very clean, very beautiful, delicate, but harsh, you know?
Right. And you had pointed out that she, with the mask, it almost makes her look like a bird. And mm-hmm. I wanted to point that out because at the very end, Carl talks about a moment with a bird.
Mm, this delicate thing in his clutches.
Right. But it was so just kind of put a pin in that, you know, this mask that she's wearing kind of has like this point on the nose mm-hmm. and it makes it look like she's kind of like a bird.
And the costume designer wanted to go for a Black Widow type mm-hmm. motif. So that's where the black and red come in. So starkly, I think, she's very beautiful, but you can tell that there is something very wrong. She has a veneer on her. You'd want to call it like a base coat, like a very no contours, very base coloring on her mm-hmm. skin. So she has no cheekbones. She is just this, it almost looks gold. Like it's more yellow than her natural skin tone, where we've seen her, and I have not said this yet, but does she not strike you as a Disney princess up until this very moment?
Yes.
Talking to animals, mm-hmm. helping children, yeah. looking beautiful, natural, curly hair, very approachable and touchable, and like you could be in her presence and be very relaxed. And now she is this very rigid, stiff figure who is, by all accounts, gorgeous, but she could tear you in half.
Oh, yeah. And what's interesting about this is Vincent Vaughn takes the mask off and he's trying to like talk her out of it. Mm-hmm. And she just starts like going after him in a sexual manner. So like my note right here was Love Novak is not easily swayed by the J-Lo because like she's really attractive right here.
Yes.
And it's like, but he's like, nope, we gotta stay focused. Gotta stay focused.
My notes are here are like, how can you get seduced knowing somebody less than 20 hours? I mean, call me a sapiosexual, but like, we don't know each other. I have no reason to find you attractive except for like your physical qualities. Mm-hmm. And also, I think you might kill me.
Thanks, The Plotter, for joining us for part 3 of our review of 2000's The Cell. We're narrowing in on finishing our review of the plot and can't wait to share our shocked and applaudable moments next week. Also, we're celebrating the mental health podcasting genre this month, and we think you might enjoy these shows. Victims and Villains discusses where pop culture meets suicide prevention. And Mental Health Film Comment talks about depression, bipolar, anxiety, and other mental health issues while discussing great cinema. You can find links to these shows in this release's description. Hey. This is your audio engineer and the chatbot they first tried to use to cure Edward, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud is ad-free because we're listener-supported? We'd love it if you'd consider being an official applauder for only $1 per month through Patreon. Just click the heart icon at the top of shockedandapplaud.com to subscribe to our unbleeped episode feed. We'll be back in 1 week for the final part of our review of this beautiful, dramatic thriller. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.